Hello and welcome to the Midweek F1 podcast. This is the podcast where it's the last look at the race just gone, the first look at the race coming up. I am your host, Nicola Hume, and as always, I am joined by the Pele of F1 commentary. It's Ben Edwards.
Thanks, Nicola. I'm not sure I'm a Portuguese star or a Brazilian star. In fact, Pele was a Brazilian football star, yeah. But that's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, obviously we had to bring that up because we are going to be talking about Brazil.
We are.
What a race.
It was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed the race. And I've been to Brazil many times in the past. I always love going to that track. And this weekend, once again, it delivered a fantastic event, which is pushing us forward into the final three races to determine the championship. So there's so much to talk about.
Three races and a sprint, because it was also a sprint weekend,
indeed,
isn't it?
It was.
So it was quite a bit of drama within the sprint race, which we will be talking about a little bit later
yeah,
on.
Yeah, the sprint makes a difference. And it certainly helped Lando Norris. It did not help Oscar Piastri.
No, it did not. Right, before we move on, make sure you subscribe if you are watching on YouTube. Click the bell button, then you'll get notifications every time a new video goes live. If you're on social media, we are Midweek F1. Right. We thought because there's a lot to talk about, it's only right that we bring in our guest right from the get-go. So please welcome back to the show. It's Sky Sports F1 reporter, journalist, and now author, Rachel Brooks. Now author.
I know. Author. Scary. Well, I have written a book. It is out in May next year. It's available for pre-order now, I have to say that. But yeah, it's about the secrets of success for Formula One, essentially. How one driver can be on P1, one can be P20 in the same car, and how drivers win world championships.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it than that, but that basically sums it up.
Oh, pre-order.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, absolutely. And Rachel, it's really great to have you with us. And particularly as we've got lots to talk about and that we need to talk about is going to be about three drivers we're not sure about for next year in 2026, who they're going to be in particular teams. So that's something we really want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. And then we have our midweek F1 Championship of the World. So last week, we all put in our predictions. Harry Benjamin was sat in that seat.
Right. How did he do?
Spoiler alert. I'm just going to say it was bad all round.
Really?
All round.
Oh, wow.
Like, wow. Like, probably the worst. Yeah, the worst we've ever had.
No way.
From everyone.
Who did you go for?
We'll get into that later.
Yeah, don't worry. Because we'll be talking about Las Vegas. We will be talking about what we think might be happening in Las Vegas. Last year, it was a very good win by George Russell. And in fact, Lewis Hamilton, when he was driving for Mercedes, he came from a long way down the grid to finish second to George. So for some reason, they worked well there. We'll talk more about that later on. And of course, there's a lot to get stuck in. So let's get started.
Right. Okay. Where do we even begin with the weekend just gone? Because Brazil was absolutely bonkers. I mean, obviously, to begin with, everyone was bringing up the weather. What's the weather going to do? Is it going to rain? Because if it rains, then Max will be amazing. But hey, that didn't matter. Pit lane to podium. We'll be discussing that a little bit later on. And then you had penalty points thrown out to Oscar Piastri. We had safety cars, virtual safety cars, overtakes galore. It was completely and utterly bonkers. Where do we begin? Let's start with sort of initial thoughts from producer Jim, because then we can kind of take it bit by bit as we normally do on this podcast. Producer Jim.
Okay, championship focus one.
Yes.
With every point now a prisoner. Piastri makes a spectacular double pass on the safety car restart. He locks but gets squeezed by Antonelli. The resulting contact puts Leclerc out of the race. Racing incident or stick on? Penalty. Discuss.
Well, that was one of the good questions, I think, because it was, as soon as I saw it, I thought, I need to see a replay. Need to see a replay. And I saw several replays, and then we saw that he was given a 10-second penalty. In my own opinion, I did feel, to me, it was like a race start. It was a restart because it was behind safety car, and yes, they weren't off the grid. But race start, they really quite... They back off the marshal directors. They back off. They don't make many decisions on things going wrong. Mexico, particularly, when so many cars were going off all over the place and no penalties were given. But Piastri, on a restart, I thought he did a good job. He went down the inside. Kimi Antonelli did not make a very good restart. He did lock up a tyre. And yes, I think I understand that was kind of why they gave him a penalty. But when I looked at it, he didn't actually go wide. He was still in control, I thought, of the car. And I think it felt like Kimi just turned in a little bit too tightly, a little bit too soon. Yes, he had Leclerc on his outside, which made it difficult for him. So it was a tough one. To me, though, it was a race incident, a restart race incident, rather than a 10-second penalty. But It has to go the way it goes, and even Piastri accepted that.
This is what people are saying, is it should have been a racing incident, but because it was a little bit scatty, because of that lock-up, and because it was a little bit out of control, is what people are saying on socials. And
it didn't feel out of control to me. But that's lock up and hold the car if you're that talented.
Yeah, that's what people seem to be claiming. It's down to the loss of control.
It's a really difficult one. I think the penalty was harsh, because when you look at it... you'd have to say Antonelli did look, and you can see him look in his mirrors on the left. He knows Oscar's there. He was watching out for Charles on the right, and he comes in, and Oscar does lock up, and they look at, oh, well, if he's locked up, then he's clearly not in control of the car if you're a steward. However, he does stick to the apex. It's not like he's going straight on at that point. Yeah. He's sticking to the apex. So I understand why Oscar feels harshly done by. When you think back to Texas Turn 1, when Oscar came across,
yes,
and he was told, you should have known there were cars coming up the inside. Essentially, after the event, people were saying, you should have known there were 17 cars behind you trying to come up the inside. Should you then apply that to Kimi Antonelli and say, Kimi, you should know that there might be, you knew Oscar was there. Did you know he was coming up the inside? There are a lot of variables to this. So I think I would agree with you, Ben. I think that looks more like a racing incident. And I think, yes, he's right to feel harshly done by. But if you're a steward, you're going to look at the black and white of it, and you're going to say, you were locked up, therefore you weren't completely in control of that car, and therefore we have to give you the penalty according to the letter of the law.
Yeah, I do understand that, because the modern rules are different to what they used to be. And I do understand the stewards felt with that lock up, they might have to do something. I just wish it was a bit more the old days and there had been a race incident, but fair enough. And I do think Kimi Antonelli, I think he was aware initially that Oscar was up the inside, but because of the angle you take into that corner, I think he lost vision, didn't he? Lost a bit of vision of where exactly Oscar was, and so he turned in. So it was one of those things, I think.
I mean, that's now five races where Oscar hasn't been on the podium.
So I'm going to give you some stats here. I remember last time I was on with you, you were brilliant with some figures and numbers. I was like, right, I need to outnumber you again, and I'm going to come back.
Feel free to do it. Go for it.
So if you look at Oscar last year from Singapore to Abu Dhabi, his results were 3rd, 5th, 8th, 8th, 7th, 3rd, 10th. It's an average position of 6.2, 6th. On the grid. Lando was 1st, 4th, 2nd, 6th, 6th, 10th, 1st, which is an average of 4th, just over 4th on the grid. So these races are worse for Oscar traditionally. They were last year.
Yeah.
They are this year. There's a bit of a correlation in terms of lower grip tracks. Oscar doesn't like as much. He's not as happy on lower grip tracks, and that's what we've had recently. After they did the running on Friday, they realised that the grooves that were cut into the surface weren't great on the car.
Yeah, they were really deep.
Yeah, and so McLaren actually had to raise the car a little bit. That meant he had less downforce, and Oscar wasn't as happy. He doesn't like the car moving around as much and sliding around as much, whereas Lando's a bit more comfortable at controlling that.
Right.
And so the conditions and everything that happened sort of lent more towards Lando across the weekend because of the surface conditions, because of the environment, because of so many different reasons. So when Oscar's already going into a race where it's not one of his best tracks and he knows it's going to be low grip and difficult, to then add that element into it, you can see why his performance went down. And he can see that. The trouble is, he doesn't seem to have answers how to get over that right now. Yeah. That's the problem. When you look at his body language, when I spoke to him in Mexico, it's very different Oscar from the start of the season.
It is.
He looks as though he doesn't have the answers, whereas the start of the season, if something went wrong, you felt like he knew where it had gone wrong.
Yeah.
But he now looks a little bit lost, and they need to really find that quickly if he's going to stay in this fight.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. And we're going to find out how it goes in the next three races. And in fact, Las Vegas, which we'll talk about in a little while, hasn't been a great track for McLaren generally. But we'll talk about that later.
Producer Jim.
I'd like to add an extra Oscar question, which is, would he have gone for the ambitious double overtake had he had a decent sprint race?
Yeah, well, it was a shame that he went off. And I mean, it was a tricky condition, that sprint race, because there had been some dampness around. Well, absolutely, we do think. Opinion. Go on, tell us.
Did Lando put a little bit of water out there? I don't know.
I think he did, because that's what Kimi Antonelli actually said. He actually reported on the radio, Lando's gone over the curb and kicked up some water. Kimi was aware and made sure he didn't go over the curb. But of course, Oscar was that little bit further, you know, back, and he didn't know that it would have been wetter. It's still a bit of a risk to go over the curb, but you can normally do it in that situation. But it cost him and two others as well. Same lap, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, as it says in my book about driving in the wet, stay off the curbs.
Available for pre-order. Yeah. Subscribe by then.
No, but it's true. It is, you know, one of those things you get taught when you first start racing is the curbs, the painted lines are very slippy in the wet. Even the racing line is worse in the wet. So, you know, you have to have that in the back of your mind. Yes, you know, Lando managed to go over it. Lando sometimes takes a different line in the wet to other drivers. If you watch him closely, he went over it. He didn't go quite as far onto the curb as Oscar did. He did throw up some water. I love George's comment. It's like he was playing Mario Kart and chucking bananas out on the track for other drivers. And he did. And Oscar afterwards said, I know I took too much of that curb and I shouldn't have done. You know, he accepted that. So it was one of those things. He wasn't the only one, as you say. And in those conditions, I think when you're under pressure, you know, a lot of those basics that you know kind of go out the window when you're really pushing and really trying to claw something back.
I'm just going to throw this out there and say Max also slipped a little bit on that curb, but he saved it. So
yeah, but he is phenomenal.
He is phenomenal. Quite producer right. Jim.
Okay, championship.
Not that Oscar's not. Oh no, don't get me in trouble. Sorry, Jim.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, not that Oscar's not phenomenal or anyone else. I just get told off.
Yep, stay on the fence. Very good. Championship focus two. Max Verstappen changes an engine and a floor for Sunday's race and is reborn one of the greatest fight back drives in F1 history, but he is now 49 points behind Lando. Was this the end of Max's championship challenge discuss?
Right.
No.
Right. Stay with me. There are now 83 points available. Three lots of 25 and the sprint race.
Yes.
So Lando seemed a bit concerned after the race, saying, Max looked particularly fast. I don't think we are fast enough. Knowing that Max is now happy with this new engine and the new kind of setup that he had, because that race was incredible, going from pit lane to podium was unbelievable drive from Max. It feels like it's still on. And I don't know, maybe Lando is potentially due a hiccup. I'm just going to throw it out there that maybe everything's been going pretty well for Lando and we haven't seen that smoother run from Lando for such a long time that maybe there is a hiccup that's due, unless he can just keep his cool and then win every race. But there is that possibility that Max would be up there. I mean, Max had the puncture and then he stopped again for softs. And who knows? Without pitting again, he could have won. We don't know. But I think it's still game on, dare I say it.
Okay, so I don't think Lando's going to slip up. I hope I haven't cursed him by saying that. Because earlier in the season, when he was having his rough run of form, he went away with the team and they worked on it. And a little birdie told me that they decided to take the delta off his steering wheel in qualifying.
Right.
Which they did around the summer break, just before the summer break, I think, one or two races before the summer break. They decided to do that. And so Lando then, in qualifying, runs by the feel on the track. And he has no idea if he's up or down on his teammate or on himself. He doesn't have that information anymore. So he purely drives those qualifying laps as though every corner counts. I mean, completely flat out. There's nothing else in his mind except nailing every single inch of that track. And he said that's massively helped him. And in Mexico, funnily enough, after qualifying, he said to me, it was a sensational lap. And he said to me afterwards, he said, I miss that excitement that Will and Jarv, his engineers, get, because they can see that I'm going to take pole or I'm doing really well.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't get that anymore. And so I miss that, but it's helping me get those laps.
Yeah.
So a lot of his confidence on a Saturday and his performance has come from not having to think about anything else anymore. And the team have helped him work in other areas as well, but that is one thing that's really helped him. So he's in a different frame of mind right now in that car. He's not the Lando he was earlier on in the season. I also think that he's had some races, some tracks that have suited him. The car's been great. And so that confidence has built up. As far as Max is concerned, you can never rule him out. Never rule him out. I do query why they didn't one stop yesterday, considering Lando's tyres that he put on were something like 8 laps old already when he put them on. I do think they could have rolled the dice and you've seen Red Bull be really bold and aggressive in the past and say, let's do it, let's try it, we've got nothing to lose. So I'm not sure if anything else was on the table for Max yesterday, but boy, does he get everything out of that car when he's given it.
Yeah. I mean, still, to come from the pit lane start to get a podium was amazing. And he was so close to getting second place. Kimi Antonelli did a good job to hold him off in those last couple of laps. That was impressive. That's really interesting what you're saying about Lando, actually. I didn't know that he'd taken that off his steering wheel, that he knows how fast I'm going in this session and how it's helped him. That's really interesting, because I am impressed with what I've seen from Lando in recent races. Really impressed. He's back up to the sort of level we have seen before. Oscar Piastri struggling a bit. So that's what makes this so interesting. But I am not discounting Max Verstappen. I am not discounting it. Even though the points are quite big, it's going to be tough for Max, but he has such talent. And the way he works with the team, I mean, that for me this weekend, in a way, the way that team is working together with Max to suddenly make it work so brilliantly on the Sunday, they can do that going forward. And it's up to the others to keep up. But it's not impossible for Max to still be there at the end. Who knows?
Do you think they have a sense of what if they'd had that set up and they'd gone with that at the start of the weekend? Do you think they have a sense of what if at Red Bull?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you can't not, can you?
I mean, could he have won the sprint and the race? Had they? I mean, that's the third different setup they tried by Sunday morning.
Yeah.
But if they'd had that from the get-go on the Friday, could that's Max have walked away with 33 points this weekend?
Yeah, his number.
But there's no doubt the technology. When you're running a sprint race weekend, it's always a bit difficult because you only get that first practice and then you're straight into qualifying.
Yeah, yeah.
It is quite tough sometimes.
I'm enjoying the fact that people are now rooting for Max because he does seem like the underdog and he feels like he's now the people's princess. I'm kind of enjoying it.
Does he say that? Has he told you he feels like that?
I've said he feels like the prince. He feels like
people's princess.
He's the people's champion, the people's princess now.
I'll ask him that in Vegas. Shall I ask him?
Because even while there was the podium going on, they were singing the Max Verstappen song.
It's true.
Like,
it is
you
true.
Know,
we love an underdog.
We do.
It doesn't matter who it is. As long as they're the underdog, we'll root for them.
Producer Jim.
Okay, championship focus three. Lando executes the perfect sprint race weekend and his championship lead jumps from 1 point to 24 points. Has he peaked at the right time or can he still be beaten? Discuss.
He's doing well. He's doing really well. I'm impressed with what Lando Norris. I mean, the fact that he got, as you say, pole position for both races, you know, for the sprint race and for the main race. And his starts are really good now. Because in the past, we've seen Lando qualify really well, but then just struggle a bit on the opening laps. But recently, in recent Grand Prix, he is now storming away. Not perfect start all the time, but enough to get in front. And I'm just impressed about the way that mentally he's dealing with it all, just taking it race by race by race. Doesn't mean it can't go wrong. I know what you were saying, that he maybe will have
a
problem at some point, but I am impressed with what he's doing. And right now he is looking more like the favourite to be champion.
Yeah.
I am impressed. I feel like this was a crucial weekend for him in the sense that Vegas is not, I know we're going to come on to it, but it's not going to be great for McLaren. It shouldn't be great for McLaren if you look at their car and the characteristics and the nature of the track. So this could be a weekend coming up where he doesn't get the points that he wants. And to be able to handle that, to have a 24-point buffer is massive because you can take the fact that you may not win, you may be down on points this weekend and actually not stress too much about it because you've got Qatar and Abu Dhabi coming up, which should be good tracks for McLaren. So I think him getting that advantage now has been huge because if he was only a point ahead going into Vegas, that's a whole different weekend coming up. Because he's battling the Mercedes and the Red Bull and possibly the Ferrari, but judging by last weekend, who knows? But now it doesn't matter. He can afford to not finish in the top three in Vegas and still have a healthy lead going into those last two races.
I think I saw a post saying
he doesn't even have to win.
Yeah, if he comes P2 in every race from now on,
he'll still win the championship. Exactly. Yeah. And that's a great place to be in mentally as well.
Yeah. So who knows? Producer Jim.
Kimi Antonelli comes of age with a top draw defence from Max in the final laps to bag his first second place. With Vegas nighttime temperatures favouring the Mercedes, could he go one better next time out? Discuss.
I think he could. I feel like the last few races, he's just become this incredible rookie where you're just like, oh, he's found his feet. He gets it. Mm. He gets it. He's comfortable. He's happy. And it just seems like he's now becoming super impressive.
Yeah, especially first time he'd raced at Brazil. I mean, that's a surprise. First time he'd raced there, and yet he was outpacing George Russell. And we all know George is very top level. He was the winner last year at Las Vegas, of course, George, so we shall see. But yeah, I'm impressed with what Kimi Antonelli's doing. And the way he was able to defend from Max in those last few laps where Max was getting closer and closer. Very, very impressive. No doubt about it.
That's the one question I wanted, if I'd been there, because I obviously wasn't in Brazil, was I wanted to ask him after the race was, what was it like inside your helmet in those last few laps? Like, what was going on under that helmet? Because I'm fascinated to know how he was dealing with it all. because he was brilliant. He was so measured, so composed. You know, with Max Verstappen on your tail, anybody is going to panic.
Yes.
And especially Interlagos, and especially Turn 1, where we've seen him get past basically the entire field in past occasions. I was really, really super impressed. It's going to be interesting to see how George bounces back next weekend, because we've been talking about George for so long as most underrated driver this year. Mm-hmm. He's been phenomenal. George has had an off weekend. Does he understand why? And is that going to make him even more of a threat in Las Vegas?
I think potentially. It feels like Vegas is definitely Mercedes' track. So it'll be an interesting, especially now, I think now the constructors, when it comes to Ferrari over the weekend, it feels like Mercedes now have that position in the bag, and they'll be a little bit more comfortable. They won't feel as fighty. So now they're just kind of fighting for themselves, and they'll just enjoy it more maybe.
I mean, they've been fighting all year, those two.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've just not seen it as much, probably.
But Ferrari, I mean, failing to score again this year without either car getting any points, both cars out of the race, that was bitterly disappointing for them, wasn't it?
I was gutted for Lewis.
Mm. It's the quote afterwards. I'm going to have to read this so I don't get it wrong, but it's the quote afterwards from Lewis. He said, "It's a nightmare. I've been living it for a while. The flip between the dream of driving for this amazing team and then the nightmare of the results we've had. It's been a challenge." It kind of sums it up.
This was
his dream, and it's been a nightmare, and you feel for him, because it looked like they'd almost got on top of their issues and were starting to work their way through it, and then they have a weekend like that.
Mm. Oh, bless him. Producer Jim.
Rookies under the radar with all the drama up front. Great drives from Ollie Bearman and Liam Lawson went unnoticed. Who are your top three rookies of the year? Discuss.
Oh, so we have a little WhatsApp group where we text throughout every race, right? And all we were saying the whole time is every overtake that Ollie Bearman does is just stunning. It's just a work of art. Every overtake is just so neat. Ba-boom, done. It's beautiful to watch. And he's growing and becoming really exciting to watch. And you think, well, eventually he'll end up in a Ferrari seat. Does he want to be there? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, stay with the house.
Yeah.
No, he's brilliant. I've loved watching him. And it seems like his confidence is growing as well. I mean, he has picked up a lot of penalty points. We can't forget that.
That's
something he does need to iron out of his racing. But no, brilliant. Been absolutely brilliant. He's a joy to watch. He's a joy to interview and things as well. He's got a really lovely nature about him. He's just a pleasure to have around. And some of those overtakes, I was writing notes yesterday. I was like, Bearman, sensational overtake. And it's great. It's really nice to see. I think we're lucky. We've got some great rookies on the grid right now.
I agree. And also moving into next year when we've got different cars, different technology. And I do think some of these rookies that have shone so well in cars that their teammates have been racing with for years and have got the feel, and yet they're doing a fantastic job. I mean, Kimi Antonelli, Kimi, we talked about him earlier in that he's gone through a little bit of up and down. He went through a little bit of a mid-patch, mid-season, but he's really strong again now. And I am so impressed with some of these rookies, what they're doing. Isaac Hadjar, of course, this time he didn't manage to get past his teammate, but I was really impressed that both Racing Bulls were doing so well, especially in qualifying, when we lost both of the Red Bulls in Q1, and the two Racing Bulls, they both got into the top 10. That was fantastic, wasn't it?
But it will be interesting to see next season where everyone is just starting on the same level.
Well, the interesting thing is a lot of people talk about these rookies, and they've come into it and they are so good because they've been used to all this streaming and all this other sort of stuff. And they've been doing a lot of learning doing that online and this online gaming. And it's helped them come into these cars and adapt really quickly.
Yeah.
And it could be that those rookies next year, when they have a completely different car, adapt quicker than the more experienced drivers. Yeah. That's what's going to be really exciting to see, because apparently they are so open to working around changes because they've done it before online and in streaming that they'll actually be a real challenge next year.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Producer Jim.
Constructors Championship focus. Terrible weekend for Ferrari. They dropped from second to fourth. Great weekend for Mercedes. They're up to second, followed by Red Bull. Let's talk through the midfield battle, because I frankly can't keep up. Discuss.
Well, it's a really interesting midfield battle. I think the Constructors' Championship that's going on at the moment, you've got Mercedes getting themselves into second place. They're ahead of Red Bull and Ferrari. Williams are still holding on to that midfield battle, as you talked about. They're in fifth place, and they've still got that little bit of a gap. But behind it, Racing Bulls, 10 points ahead of Aston Martin, only 2 points ahead of Haas. And then Sauber, still in the battle. They're ninth, but they are 8 points behind Haas. Alpine did manage to score a point, Alpine's not having a great season. They've had a horrible season. But to be fair, Pierre Gasly, even he was quite surprised, I think, that there was the capability to get a point. He was a bit disappointed he didn't get a bit more, but he drove well. I thought he did a fantastic job. The Alpine just hasn't been competitive. But funnily enough, in Brazil, it seems to come together again for them. But that midfield battle is going to be fun all the way through, isn't it? I think these different constructors, they're all trying to score. And the, you know, what was it? Half a second. It was just over half a second but in the top 10 qualifying.
Yeah.
It is so tight at the moment.
It's fascinating. And actually, all you need is one good result on a weekend. You need an Ollie Bearman finishing fourth, or you need a Fernando Alonso putting the car up there. I think Aston, I think, are really struggling now, and they're going to struggle for the rest of the season, those remaining races. Seeing them lose seven technical people, I think it is, that they're letting go with the new Adrian Newey era and what's going on there. I think for them, they've got the toughest battle out of those midfield teams for those final few races. Mm. Haas have found some performance. Ollie Bearman's found some confidence. That's going to spur on Esteban Ocon to try and keep up there with him, because he doesn't like being beaten, mm-hmm. as any teammate. No one likes being beaten. And also, I think the Racing Bulls, with those two in the car, for them to do that at the weekend the way they did and the composure they had, I think they're massively in that battle. Williams, they've struggled so much with tyre temperatures this season. That car seems so fragile when it comes to actually setting it up and getting it right, that I have no idea what their final few races are going to be like.
No, I think that's how it's been, though, with Williams, because it seems like even from the start of the season, they've openly said, we're concentrating on 2026. We're not really focusing on this year, but we'll see how it goes. But then they had a few races where they did really great and then not so well and did really great. So they kind of, they're still sort of sitting there in the middle. I think they've done particularly well for a team that hasn't really been focused on this season. It's been weirdly impressive from Williams.
But it's only ever sort of been one of the two drivers.
Yeah.
They've never been able to get both of them in the sweet spot at each track.
Fastest lap from Alex, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
No one predicted that last week. No one. Producer Jim.
Honourable mention for Interlagos specialist Nico Hülkenberg. He seems to be battling with everyone. Finished ninth in the end. Is he in the best form of his career just as Audi enters F1? Discuss.
I think he is.
I don't actually agree with that, because I think he's always been great. I just don't think he's been in the right car at the right time. I watched him from very early in his career, and I was always impressed by Nico Hülkenberg. I'm so pleased he got that podium earlier this year. Yeah. Fantastic. Yes, he's delivering well for the team, but I think he's got that ability. It's just being in the right car at the right time when it's an Audi. Maybe even better. Let's see. It'd be interesting.
That is potentially the subject of one of the chapters in my book. Yeah. Being in the right car at the right time. And it literally talks about Nico Hülkenberg. And the fact that he had a chance for the Red Bull seat before Sergio Perez took it.
Yes.
So, you know, there have been opportunities there for him. And he's just missed out every time. And I feel like, I thought if he went through his career without getting a podium, that would be a crying shame. So it was lovely to see him on the podium at Silverstone. But absolutely underrated. He's in my fantasy team every year at Interlagos. No matter who I have to kick out, he will be in my fantasy team because he finds something special at Interlagos. But yeah, I mean, I would love to see him in a good car and really see what he can do.
I mean, who's to say, you know, Audi next season might be incredible. You don't know. It seems like Jonathan Wheatley and they're all kind of just finding their feet. And it seems the team are just coming together and becoming stronger and stronger as the weeks go on. So it's exciting.
It'd be fantastic. Yeah, it would be great if that's a good car.
Right, social media this week. I had a little browse this morning, so normally I get up. I don't get up. I have a coffee in bed while I sit there.
I was about to say, there's no way you get up to look through social media.
No, I lay in bed, I have a coffee while I scroll through social media to see what's going on, to talk about it on this podcast. And everywhere is all about the driver's parade.
Oh, it was brilliant.
It was magnificent. And it wasn't just magnificent, because I love the fact when they get to drive that they have the best time, like we saw it with the Lego cars earlier on in the season. But for the fact that there were a couple of cars that broke down.
Yeah, so Aston Martin
broke down, Mercedes broke down, so George had to ask for a lift from Red Bull, and then you had both Aston Martins jumping in with a McLaren, then you had Lando that was Twitch streaming the entire thing. All of the social stuff has been so entertaining from that.
Did you see the two Williams drivers as they went back to the grid and saw the cars? They ran to beat each other to be in the driving seat. Carlos and Alex literally fought each other off to be in the driving seat, and then while they were trying to do the interviews at the start of the grid, the drivers weren't waiting to be told to go, they just went.
Oh.
And so they were driving around each other and through cameras, TVs, broadcasting and everything, because that's all they want to do is just race, those guys. It was brilliant. Loved it.
It's fun. So nice because you're seeing all the different teams set up, but at the same time, you know that they're all just 20 mates.
Yeah.
And they all just get along regardless of who you're driving for. So the fact that they picked up George, and then you've got this wonderful picture of Max and George and Yuki with half his face kind of covered while he's trying to drive the brilliant. Car.
And Alpine won, which they haven't done all year, and they'd like you to do for the rest of the season.
No point, so.
And Charles cut the corner. Did you see that? The Ferrari totally cut the corner. Went right across the grass, just cut the corner to try and get an advantage.
I see. Well played. But by the way, on social media, we are Midweek F1, so make sure you follow. Thank you very much.
Lovely stuff. Well, we've got so much to talk about over the course of this week. And what we've got right now, Rachel, is a bit of a question for you particularly. You've been interviewing drivers week in, week out on the Sky F1. What do you think how Lando has changed his approach in the second half of the season? Because he seems really on top of everything right now. You did tell us a little bit about in qualifying, he's now not focusing on how fast he's going by looking at the clock. But what else do you think is really helping Lando at the moment?
I know that he's worked really hard with the team. The team have worked really hard with him, as they would with either driver, to try and find out the flaws that were happening in the first half of the season, how they could fix things, how they could make him feel more confident in the car. I think it's been some tracks that have suited him better as well, that have come along just at the right time for him. Taking the Delta off has massively helped, because he's only having to race against himself, essentially, as opposed to seeing it for him, seeing that he's half a tenth down on his teammate affects him. So take that away, and now he is literally just driving that lap the best he can for himself. He talked to me about how there is a kind of sort of a zone you get into when you have a great lap that is very rare to get into, but he's done that twice now this year. He's managed to get into that zone, which he said is really, really rare. But actually, for him to have been able to do it now twice in the last few races, you'd have to say some things clicked, some things changed, where you are able to put yourself into that zone, which is ultimately what any driver wants to do in qualifying, is to get into that zone where you are almost not even driving the car.
Yeah.
Where you are at one with the car, you are the car, and it responds to every input and it does exactly what you're expecting. And he's managed to find that. And I don't think that's by chance. I think that's a lot of work with him and the team that have been able to find that. I think seeing his teammates struggle has only helped him a little bit more. But I also think that he's got to a point where he doesn't need to worry about what his teammate's doing, because he's feeling so good in the car and he's feeling so good in his own, confident in his own ability, that actually that's not affecting him as much as it was earlier in the season, whatever his teammate does, good or bad.
I also think potentially removing himself a little bit from social media has helped, because I know that he took a little break, and a lot of social media can be such an angry place.
He did step back, but he's told me he's back on it now.
Completely full time, back on it as normal.
It seems to be, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so he did take a massive step back and actually took it off completely. He did also say that he wasn't having alcohol this year. He was going to really focus. So if you remember, Nico Rosberg made a huge amount of changes in 2016 in order for him to win the World Championship.
Yeah.
Lando did put some stuff in place at the start of this year, and one of those was the partying. Stop doing that. I need to really focus, because I think this is going to be my best chance, at least at the moment, to win a world title. So he did change a lot of things. He did completely come off social media, but he has come back on it a bit now. I wouldn't presume to say fully, but he is back on it to quite an extent at the moment, and it's not affecting him. So
because when you think of Max, right, you think the last few seasons where Max has won the championship, that's when he's been in full party mode and drinking lots of gin and tonic.
Yeah.
Whereas this year, he's had a baby. He's not partying as much. So maybe Max needs to party more
for him
to be able to do well.
Yeah, maybe that is what's missing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on social media quite a lot as well, though, because you get those random clips sent to you, don't you, from their Twitch streaming or whatever, where where he's doing something bizarre or random, or Penelope's come in and asked him if he can do something.
Yeah,
he's
just like, so sweet. So sweet. Tell us about the book. Give us a proper plug of the book. Because last time we saw you, you were working on it, but now it's like pre-orders are happening.
I know.
People are actually ordering it now.
I know, they're spending money on it. Like, are you mad? But it's huge pressure as well, because I'm like, I want to make sure it's really good. I've learned so much writing it that I didn't already know about Formula One, and that's what I wanted to do. So it's essentially for the new audience, but also even if you've watched it for a long time, you will learn something from this. So how is Max on P1 when his teammate's P20 is one chapter in the book, explaining how One driver can drive around issues. One driver prefers a loose rear, others with a pointy front. Others prefer a really stable rear.
Yeah.
It's all sorts. I mean, there are chapters on everything, defensive driving, driving in the wet, the edge, the little tiny margins that make a world champion. So there are all sorts of little things that go on when someone wins a world championship that you maybe never hear about, but they all play a part in the season. And so there are stories from there. I've spoken to current drivers, ex-drivers, team principals, all sorts of people up and down the grid for it. And it's basically the secrets to success. There are 20 drivers in the world, 22 next year with 11 teams. They are the best in the world. And yet, of the 73 I've interviewed across the course of my 14 years in the sport, only 8 have been world champions. Yeah. Why? What makes them different? And how can you be successful in as a driver in Formula One?
It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be really interesting.
I hope so.
to read what you're talking about. And the fact that you've been able to talk to so many of the drivers and actually do specific interviews with them, I gather, to get out of them what counts as being absolutely top level. That's going to be so interesting.
Yeah, I there were some really great stories in it, stuff I hadn't heard before.
Okay.
And then just different approaches as well. It's been great. And then the last chapter is the GOAT. And that's just... who is the GOAT?
Oh,
yeah. Well, that's fun.
That's so the question. That's ultimate question.
Yeah, so I asked everybody who their GOAT is, and then it's all in there. I'm not going to give anything away.
is the answer in there?
You'll have to read it and find out.
Pre-order now.
More good.
Remind us, what's it called?
It's called F1 Racing Drive.
Okay.
So Drive being the main title that you'll see on the shelves.
Okay, lovely. Wow. Well, we need to talk about now.
Yes.
So we've been talking about that.
Oh, but
we've got plenty of other things we need to talk about. And this week, we want to talk about 2026 seats for drivers. We know most of who's where for next year. But interestingly, it is Red Bull and Racing Bulls that we are not sure about yet. So let's get it from both of you.
I don't know anything.
You've got the insight. Come on.
I don't know anything.
Have you not been booked to
I have absolutely no
reveal?
Information whatsoever.
Okay, now I'm going to read your face because I love body language. So I'm going to read your face as I throw these names out here and see how you react. Isaac Hadjar is in the Red Bull next year. You're twitching.
Right.
You're twitching. Your lips are twitching.
I'm laughing because Ben.
So essentially, 100%. I believe Isaac Hadjar is in the second seat next year. There's been no announcement. They said they would decide after Mexico. They're not announcing at the moment. I think Liam Lawson's thrown a little bit of the spanner in the works, and that he's done so well recently. And so I think the Racing Bulls seats, in my opinion, would be Lawson and probably Arvin Lindblad, because they seem really keen to get Arvin Lindblad in the seat. So I would look at Hadjar moving up to Red Bull. I don't think there's a place for Yuki. And I think, sadly, last weekend has just shown that, you know, he's just struggling so much.
I agree. I mean, Yuki Tsunoda has shown some great talent in the past, but this year has been bitterly disappointing, really. I felt for him a bit that then the Red Bull team made a mistake in his pit stop where he then got an extra penalty. But to be fair, Yuki's just not been delivering particularly well. And when you look at how Max went from, you know, a bad day Saturday to a brilliant day Sunday, Yuki has not been able to do that sort of thing recently. Sadly, it does look as though he's not going to be driving in F1 next year.
It'll be interesting to see if he can kind of... If he does leave Red Bull, I don't know. If he does leave Red Bull, that if he could just follow along with Honda and maybe do some reserve stuff when it comes to Aston Martin. But you don't know what's available and what he can carry on doing. I mean, he can carry on in different racing programs and still have that partnership with Honda. But I don't know.
What about other... I know you're involved with Red Bull, but and you can't tell us things that you do know. But there are other drivers in the junior Red Bull teams, aren't there? Racing in Formula 2, etc. Are there any other drivers...
I mean,
Arvid
seems to be talk of the town.
Arvid, yes. Because he's been part of Red Bull for several years, the junior team, hasn't he? Yeah.
And also, I mean, you hear so many rumours of, like, Alex Dunn and things like that. So I'd when it comes to Racing Bulls, I don't know.
Okay.
I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk, wasn't there, when Alex Dunn left from working with McLaren.
Yeah.
That, does that mean that he's got a seat somewhere else?
Yeah.
Or does it mean he's got a reserve seat somewhere else with potential? I don't know. I mean, if you're put in as a reserve driver at Red Bull Racing, you've got to think there's half a chance mid-season you're going to get swapped in with someone,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Unlike any other team. So maybe it is a better option. I don't know. But I think Liam's given them a problem by doing some better performances recently that's potentially thrown a spanner in the works, where they've gone, oh, hang on a minute, let's just not make the final decision yet.
Yeah, so it seems like, yeah, I mean, we all heard the rumours of, oh, there's going to be announcements and stuff after Mexico, and then nothing was announced. So then you're like, oh, it's because you're looking at certain numbers of the last few races. Or is anything, has anyone signed? Yeah. Are you just holding it?
Or is it done and you just don't want to throw anyone's season off by saying
yes,
it yet?
Yeah.
And of course, one of the aspects that was made going into this weekend that we now know is that Franco Colapinto is definitely driving for Alpine for next year.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some mixed opinions, I notice, about that. Colapinto has some great backing, sponsorship from behind as well. Argentina, that's where he comes from, and there's some backing from there. We might even get a Grand Prix in Argentina again in
the
future.
He had a lot of fans there this weekend.
There are a lot of fans. Yeah. Which is lovely.
A lot of fans, a lot of merch.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Franco's convinced us all that he's total top level, but he's done a good job at certain times. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes forward.
That's such a hard car to drive.
Yeah.
Is it really fair to judge him on it?
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah. Right, should we look ahead to Vegas?
Yes. Let's have a look towards Vegas. That is going to be a very...
I'm checking my notes.
Yeah, I bet you are. Well, we were talking about it earlier, that George Russell won this race last time. And the fact that Lewis Hamilton had not qualified well, but he came all the way through to finish in second place. 1-2 for Mercedes. So we really think Mercedes could be strong again, because we've seen Mercedes star occasionally this year. Not every time, but Kimi Antonelli was definitely a star in Brazil. George has been a star several times for Mercedes this year. So what do we think? Are Mercedes going to be the dominant force in Las Vegas, or is it going to be somebody else?
I think yes, 100%. I think also the cooler temperatures, because Vegas is so flipping cold.
Yeah, at night,
I know
yeah.
it's 2 hours earlier this year. They brought everything forward a couple of hours, but it is still so cold that it is really, really important to get the tyre temps right.
Yeah.
And Mercedes seem to have a handle on that when it's really cold. So I would still say, yes, Mercedes favourites. I think McLaren have looked at this race all year and said, we're going to take a hit there.
Yeah.
I don't feel they've ever said that they're hoping to have a good race in Vegas. So yeah, 100% Mercedes. I think Max is going to be the next quickest, because you just can't put anything past him right now in that Red Bull. I'm not thinking Red Bull as a team. I'm just thinking Max is going to be the next quickest.
Yeah.
And then potentially the McLarens, because Ferrari seem a bit lost.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's only right that we move on to our prediction championship of the world. So basically, here's what happened last week. All of us scored nothing.
Oh my gosh.
No surprise.
Who did you go for? How could you not score anything?
So that's normal for Ben.
Yeah, fairly normal.
Okay.
For me,
Ben never scores anything.
Okay.
And then Harry Benjamin, nothing. Me, nothing.
Who did
Producer
you go
Jim,
for?
Nothing. Did we all go Max? I went Max. I think Harry went Oscar. None of us got fastest lap ride. None of us guessed Alex.
Well, that's okay, yeah.
None of us put Lando as the winner. I did mention that, because I thought it was a bit surprising that none of us had. I didn't put him, but I thought it was a bit surprised none of us. And then, of course, he went on to win.
That's the secret then, clearly.
So, as it stands, in P1, Producer Jim with 75 points. In P2, Team Guest with 73 points.
Okay.
Then it's me with 66, and then it's Ben with 59. Now, we do have to give some shout-outs, because we do have a few people on TikTok that got it absolutely right and got Lando's
I'm going to write their names down so I can follow them for this week.
So well done, JordBry220 and Glazard0 on TikTok, who absolutely nailed it getting Lando right. So well played.
Wow,
very well played.
Yeah, but so nobody got the top three. Nobody
got
all three.
No one got all three and fastest lap.
I think Kimi is the complete outsider there for that. I'm not surprised. Mm. I'm not surprised.
So now we need to look at Vegas. So we need P1, P2, P3, fastest lap.
George Russell, P1.
Ooh.
Kimi Antonelli, P2. Max Verstappen, P3.
Wow.
And
really...
Antonelli, fastest lap.
You're not even putting a McLaren on the podium.
Nope.
Cheeky. Mm. Who was your fastest lap?
Kimi Antonelli.
Oh, God. I love it.
Mm, interesting.
Ben?
This is a tough one. I'm actually going to go for Max Verstappen, potentially, for the win for this one. But he's won
that
here in the past.
That means it's not going to happen. It's such a shame.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's reverse psychology. So Lando's going to win now in Vegas, because we're all saying no.
You always have to do the opposite of what Ben says, because Ben never scores.
Fine, good.
But I'm going to go for Max to win. I'm actually going to go for Lando second, so that'll be wrong too. And I'm going to go for George in third place. I'm going to go fastest lap for... Who should we go for? Fastest lap. I will go for Antonelli.
Okay. Max P1. That's not because I have a contract with Red Bull. That's because I genuinely... This is happening now.
Okay.
This is happening.
Nah. Okay.
Right?
It's going to go down to the last race.
Max P1.
Yep.
Kimi P2. George P3. Fastest lap. Oscar.
Okay. In fact, funnily enough, you say that because McLaren have had fastest lap in the two previous Las Vegas races, but it's because they've both made late pit stops, got fresh tyres on, and set fastest lap. Even they haven't scored brilliantly in terms of their
result. They've got the point for fastest lap.
But they've had fastest lap at each of the last two Las Vegas.
They won't bother because they can't get a point.
Makes me seem more clever because I didn't actually know that. So that was
yeah, but you don't get a point for it anymore, so they won't do it now.
No, but you get a point on this show.
Oh.
So it's worth it for a point in our championship.
You know, McLaren won't bother doing it this year.
We
don't
know. No, that's true. That's really
good. Know what Jim wants.
I didn't think about that. Producer Jim.
Okay, I'm going Russell first, Antonelli second, and I'm also going Max third.
Oh, you're
But I'm going to go Russell fastest lap.
Okay. This is interesting because you're winning right now. That fastest lap point will only draw me to within one of you.
Yeah, because it's 2 points between Jim and Team Guest.
Sneaky from him.
Yeah.
Did he write that down before or did he just copy me?
Yeah, I don't know if I trust his judgments.
I'll write these down beforehand.
He's a very sneaky boy.
Yeah. He's just making sure he stays ahead.
Yeah. By all means, let us know your predictions in the comments section below. If you are watching on YouTube, then make sure you click subscribe, click the bell button, then you get notifications every time a new video goes live. If you're on social media, we are Midweek F1. Put your predictions in the section below, and is that all the things that's all the things.
Subscribe now.
Thank you, and pre-order the book. Thank you.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, right. As is tradition on this show, we like to finish with a fun story, interesting fact, and I believe you've come with a fun little fact.
I have. It's about Vegas because we're going there next.
Oh yeah. Nice.
So I've got a question for you two. Vegas consumes more of this food daily than the rest of the United States combined. What is it?
I love this. Right.
I've been to Vegas a couple of times. I've got no idea.
Okay, ready?
Yep.
Shrimp.
Ben?
I've got no idea what it is.
Any food.
Beef burgers.
Jim?
Oh, I was going to go beef burgers. Salmon.
So in Vegas, 60,000 pounds of this food is consumed daily, and it is shellfish. It's amazing. I couldn't believe that.
Right. So I've been to Vegas a couple of times.
Right.
And every time, you always have to go to a buffet. Always. Please go to a buffet because they're incredible. And that's because they have all of the shellfish.
I'm allergic to it, so I've never seen it. Maybe don't go
because you'll die. But if you're not going to die from shellfish, go to a buffet. They're normally like in the basement of one of the big hotels. Like if you go to the Luxor or something like that.
They have this
a mega buffet that's like $40. But you can stuff your face with as much shellfish as you possibly can. All the crab, the lobster, the prawns, all the things.
Wow, so this is good. Brilliant knowledge.
It's so good. And you can even have it at like 7 o'clock in the morning.
Well, that's usually when you're going to bed in Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's your evening meal.
It's great. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. There's my fun fact.
It's a good fun fact. Oh, that's really, really good. Well, that's it for this week. In 2 weeks' time, of course, we will be looking back at what has gone on in Las Vegas and who's been eating what. And then we'll be looking forward to Qatar. And is the championship then going to be decided? It can't be decided in Las Vegas, but maybe, depending on what happens there, it could be decided in Qatar.
Oh, it's all the drama. I just love it.
Love it when it goes down to the end of the season.
I love it so much. So good. Don't forget to subscribe and we'll see you next time. Bye.